Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
On today's episode of The Glue Guys, Brian, I don't know what to do.
You're
this
fine.
Team
you're
is disappointing me.
Mike, it's just January. Who cares? These are the two. This is the angel and the devil, Mike, on every Nets fan's shoulder, the way we just did. And guess which one you are?
I'm the devil?
That's where we're going to stop right there. Anyways, let's bring us in.
Welcome back to The Glue Guys. This is Mike Harris. Hello, Brian.
Ugh.
Check us out on Twitter at BKGlueGuys. NetsDaily.com. TheAthletic. Get yourself behind the paywall at TheAthletic.com. I guess we are part of the New York Times podcast network.
Oh, yeah, Mike. Congrats on being a Timesman. We're a couple of Timesmen.
Don't know how much I can... I can't discuss it, Brian. You know, I'm too inside the deal.
For the avoidance of doubt, we will never talk to a person from the New York Times. I mean, fair to say. Is that...
Unless if it's the few people from the Times who listen to our show.
Unless it's the corporate overlords who tell us what to say and how to think. That's the
Peter
only...
S. Goodman. Shout out Peter S. Goodman. Economics reporter based in London.
One of the overlords.
And Jason Zinnemann. I think he's the humor critic, the comedy critic for the New York Times. Our family, our Nets family. Brian, we are Timesmen. How are you?
I'm well. I stayed up and watched that abomination of a game last night, but I'm a little crusty in the head, but which was a bad game, Mike. That was a bad game.
Give me Brian's game take. Cue the sounder.
It was a frustrating take, and that was a really frustrating game for a lot of reasons. Like, the whole narrative arc of the game sucked from beginning to end. I don't know if you caught it. You probably had like five kids bouncing on your lap,
I'm going to straight up admit, because we're a podcast where full honesty. I was watching the national championship, the football national championship game. Yeah. It was a compelling game. I know I could also be watching the Nets. I just wanted to give I apologize to our audience. I've read all about it. Brian's going to clue me in right now.
I've seen the Nasir
Little play, which is more violent than anything that happened in the football game.
Do you think it's insane that I just didn't know that football game was happening? People were talking about it. I was watching the Nets game stream, and people were like, oh, like Georgia is doing something. I think it was Georgia, right? Is that... I have so punted on all the other sports, basically, but especially college, anything.
Do you know that? So the Manning brothers, Peyton and Eli, they have a Manning cast of Monday Night Football, and it became all the rage of this year because it was really good and they had great guests. So now the alternative stream is like the big buzzword in broadcasting.
Okay.
I would love a Brian Egan alternative stream of football where you're watching the Nets. And it's just people on the Discord saying, hey, Georgia scored. You're like, okay. Nick Claxton went to Georgia.
Georgia is a state that I've heard of. Been to.
That I've been to.
Yeah. Yeah,
has
so
a
I didn't
fraught history.
I don't care about that. So, which is fun, you know, it's interesting. It's funny when I, you know, I get to really feel like a total, like a normie who doesn't care about sports at all. In those moments,
how does
which
that
was
feel?
Nice. It feels good. You just go right through. You just go trucking on right through life. You know, it doesn't really. You just truly don't know. Yeah,
I'm fantastic. Yeah. Like there, I mean, the pandemic's been awful, but there was that time when like there were no sports, and I was kind of like, hey.
Yeah,
a lot of time in the day.
A lot of time.
A lot of time could devote to literature and philosophy.
Yeah, I picked up my Melville, you know, Moby Dick. I didn't. That didn't happen. But, no, that didn't happen. But anyways, I did stay up and watch that awful, awful game. It sucked from beginning to end. It sucked because basically what they did was Tony Brothers and his ragtag crew of referees, and I'm not going to do the whole thing, but they basically front-loaded all of the fouls in the game in the first quarter, right? So just completely sucked the air out of the room. We're shooting team free throws on off-ball fouls starting at the 7 minute and 50 second mark of the first quarter. Mike, this is what we're doing on.
That should be outlawed.
At 10:30, we're still 10:40. We're still watching the first quarter drag out.
Brutal.
And then we get to the second half, in which it's just total anarchy, complete lawlessness. And so they're like, we already met our quota for fouls. Now there's no fouls. It's a no foul game. And anyways, like somebody put a mandible claw on Kessler Edwards trying to get to the rim. He just had a bloody mouth. They didn't stop the game. Nobody cares. He was just getting hammerjacked in the mouth. And then, yeah, this is your little, like, basically, the new rule is you're allowed to dive at people's ankles. So he was working that meta.
What a wild play that was.
Yeah.
So, of course, I mean, everyone has seen it now. If you watched the game or you watched it on replay, a ball is going out of bounds. It's pretty clearly just going to go out of bounds. Kyrie's basically
trotting like and watching it go out. Yeah.
Yeah, just innocently watching it go out. Nasir Little of the Portland Trail Blazers just swoops in like he's a porpoise.
Yeah.
Dives in and
twists Kyrie's, you know, oft injured ankle.
Freaking Netsian would it have been that Kyrie's second game back he gets injured if he would have been out for the season.
And again,
Got it.
No foul there. No foul called on that Nasir Little play. And Kyrie goes and is pleading his case to these guys, and they look at him like he's got a lobster on his head.
They look at him like he's unvaccinated.
Yeah, exactly. Like he has spraying disease all over them. Just kidding. So anyways, that was all happening. I think any of the current panic button hitting that I know people tend to want to do.
I have a panic button sounder. One sec.
Oh, well, you know. That is the world's panic button is the car horn, really. Like I'm freaking out.
This here. Soundboard is really like the confluence of podcasting and dad jokes. Mm. Like this is where I feel most comfortable.
Do you know
an audio based
that joke, I've become really anti car horn since starting this podcast, Mike? And I think like you have to have a podcast in order to realize just how much people honk. It's too much. We're honking too much. Nobody's getting fined. Yeah.
Do you think when like teenagers are going through sort of like they're learning how to drive they that they must have a podcast to appreciate the car horn?
because it'll mess up your pod, your audio. What were we talking about? Oh, the panic button.
Panic button.
I'm not ready to hit that yet. I do think that that we can talk a little, maybe we'll get to it in some, I don't know if there's emails or whatever, but I think there is this current situation of Kyrie playing the real games, which are away games, and not playing the fake games, the experiment games, which are home games, is a bad idea. I think that that's going to be...
Tell me why.
I think that that's going
to... Well, explain that to the audience, because some people don't understand why you call the home games experiments.
So this has become like a meme in the Discord a little bit to a certain extent. Not really. I'm kind of making it... I'm forcing the meme upon the community, the Glue Nation. But that, like, basically, like, we're starting... We start David Duke Jr. at home games as an experiment. Like, Nash experiments with the rotation in the home games when Kyrie's not available because, you know, how else do you spin this situation from a coaching perspective that you just don't have, that you one of your three best players is voluntarily missing already 75% of the season, but, like, now going – or dedicated to miss 75% of the season, including all these home games coming up. the way you spin it is like, well, this is a good opportunity to try things out. But like, try like that as a market for like, hey, come to the Nets, come to Barclays Center, a place that has a reputation for not being a home court, a really strong home court advantage, and watch Steve Nash tool around with his rotation because we don't have our full team and won't. And we're ever on paper not having a real team throughout the entirety of the season as of yet. So maybe who knows what, yeah, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Things could change. Who cares? But that is a bad, I think like people sort of aren't really processing the downstream psychological negative effects of that, that happens on a team and the, you know, at an administrative level. It just makes those games feel less serious. They just do. Losing streak for me, I feel like this is, of all the panic buttons to hit, that's a thing. Again, Mike, and I'm ready to have somebody ask Steve Nash this to his grill, to his lying face, and say, Steve Nash, are we trying to get a fifth seed?
Steve Nash is a saint.
Yeah, I know.
How dare you?
But Steve Nash, honest to goodness, here's the polygraph. Are we trying to get a fifth seed? Because it feels it feels right now like we could be trying to get a fifth seed.
Yeah, so I don't – you know I love a good conspiracy theory, particularly when it's really tied to the standings.
Yeah,
I absolutely love it. There is something weird that's been happening with this team. So there are three things – really two things that have happened over the past, let's say, 3 weeks involving this team – that have coincided with a downturn in play. The Nets, regardless of how you feel, whether you're panicking or you're just nonplus about it, something has gone wrong with this team with the past few weeks. The two main things are that everyone got COVID and that Kyrie Irving returned. So I don't know if I was trying to get like clicks, trying to be clickbait Mike.
Do it. Let's get clicks. Can we finally get some clicks? I'm like, be a clickbaiter for once.
We refuse. Yeah. You know, there was a report that came out from Bloomberg about how, like, there's no new podcast hits. That basically, you know, new shows. There's no, like, new Joe Rogan show. Like, a show that is a talky show that becomes a massive hit. Mm-hmm. Smartless is the best thing that has happened. Smartless is Jason Bateman and Will Arnett and Sean Hayes. That's, like, the best thing, and that's not even a top 30 show. Basically, if you've been around for a while, you got that beachfront property.
Right.
You and I got that beachfront property, but we're staying.
We're in Virginia Beach, though.
Yeah.
No, that's
it's
a
like
nice
the
beach.
Alabama
what's the Floribama Shore? Is that the?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I heard Alabama has some nice beaches, though.
Those are going to be nice. Okay. And the party scene's great.
Beautiful.
Love those scene. Wild parties.
We should do a live show in
I love in Florida. Yeah, like I like scooters.
We could be with AOC maskless dancing.
I love that.
In the,
I love that idea.
So two things happened, Kyrie and COVID. If I wanted to, I could say the locker room has been disrupted by Kyrie's returning. I really don't believe that. Kevin Durant and James Harden are ecstatic that Kyrie's playing basketball again. I don't know if everyone else is, but he's not really taking away from people that are like impactful. He's not taking away minutes from people that have like a great impact. Like I guess he kind of takes away a little Patty Mills. Patty Mills seems like just a saint of a human being and is only about winning and doesn't really seem to be too selfish and doesn't really care if like three more minutes are less played by him during a game. I don't know. Can we say that COVID has had an impact on this team and why they haven't been that good? Is that like
let's lean into this clickbait. The reason for the losing is because of the chaos and discord. Shout out to the Discord that Kyrie has brought upon us. Okay. We lost three games at home, four games or whatever in a row. The moment he started practicing with the team, Mike, and it was announced that they're not playing home games.
Sean Marks has forever altered the chemistry of this team.
Yes.
He should be fired.
Yes.
Joe Tsai should sell the team.
Now you're doing it.
Kenny Atkins should be brought back.
Yes.
And they should trade Kyrie Irving.
For D'Angelo Russell. That's the clickbait, Mike. You did it. Finally. How did it feel?
It felt great. Yeah. I mean, I do. What I really think is it's like a bunch of, it's death by a thousand cuts with this team. Okay. It's Joe Harris still not back. The second that Patty Mills stops hitting shots, it's not that it becomes a negative force on the team on the floor because you still want to have Patty Mills. But
I like how you phrase that. It's not that it becomes a negative. Go on.
It's not that he's a negative. Yeah. It's just that by the factor of the way he plays is that he's so much of like, I'm going to keep taking my shot even if I'm not making them. Mm-hmm. He'll keep taking them. And it's actually won them games this season where he's had a bad shooting night, but he hits a big shot at the end. So I'm not even saying it's a wrong thing to do, but when he takes seven shots and hits one of them, and then the rest of the team doesn't step up in his stead. LaMarcus Aldridge, this is LaMarcus Aldridge since December, okay? Since the beginning of December. So, but going into December, LaMarcus Aldridge was like,
yeah,
basically superstar. Comeback player of the year, which doesn't exist in the NBA, but as I embarrassingly stated, it did. But here's what he's done, okay? He's played 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 games basically over a month and a half. He's had as many as inactives as he had games he has played. During those games, he just really hasn't been the same guy. Like, he's getting like double digit. He's getting like 13, 10, 12 points, but he's not having those nights where he's like this dominant offensive force, a dominant rebounding force.
If
he's been more flow of the game.
If you have the numbers open, are his minutes trending down? I mean, it feels like when he does play, the minutes have trended down. That's a feeling I have.
Yeah. He had 5 games inactive, which I think was injury plus COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And then he came back against Philly. He didn't play Christmas. He didn't play against the Clippers. He comes back playing at Philly, 27 minutes. Then he plays against the Clippers in a disgusting Clippers game, which I don't want to discuss. 20 minutes in that game. Takes a night off against Memphis, 16 against Indiana. Then 9 minutes against Milwaukee and has been inactive. So, like, just look at the factors. Joe Harris not playing. Patty Mills has cooled off. LaMarcus Aldridge's play has decreased both in minutes and production. And yes, James Harden has played a little bit better. Kevin Durant is still MVP. But Kevin Durant's even kind of notched down a step or two. It's just that the margin of error for this team, because Kyrie's a part-time player and there's no Joe Harris, is so thin for a really good team.
It's so weird that that's the case. I mean, when I really actually now trying to, like, I'm bringing back the panic button talking points. But, like, with this team, we should be absolutely dumping on people. We should be completely dumping our bowels out on top of them. Like, it should be an insane, disgusting display of dumpage. And I can't even think of a time in which we've, like, just coasted, just dump to dump, beginning just a full 48 minutes of dumpage. Like, was there ever a game like that? Like, it feels like even if we do start to, like, pull away, we'll end up in some kind of scrappy dogfight, you know, to avoid overtime, like the stupid Spurs game. Like,
yeah, I mean, I do think across the NBA, if we won't be so myopic, I don't know if myopic's, if we're not so singularly focused on the Nets,
myopic
across colors. The NBA, there's many fewer blowouts, like, in general. Mm-hmm. This season than years past. I don't really know why that is. I guess
it's because the mid-range is back. That's why.
The mid-range is back.
Yeah.
But, like, in general, there's just, like, there are some dominant teams, but really, there's just, like, we're not seeing these, like, smackdowns like we used to. I don't know. There's, like, there has been maybe one or two games all year where it felt like it was easy. And I can't even list them off the top of my head. Like, there was that Celtics. I'm looking at it now. Celtics, November 24th. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that was at the day before Thanksgiving. That was a 19 point win.
Yeah.
Great. But that's, like, to go down that road, it's like, I also want to say this.
Yeah, please.
Is this a schedule thing? Because the Nets have lost to the 76ers, the Grizzlies, who are really good, the Bucks were really good. And those are okay losses. They're not terrible. But then they lost to the Clippers team that stunk. And the Trailblazers, that sucks. So there's just a lot of ugly data within the mix.
Mike, do you want to take a break and then take some mail and then do some news around the league?
Let's take a break. We'll take some mail. We'll do news around the league.
I love that.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to michelobultra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
And welcome back, Brian. Let's dive into the mailbag.
Do you want me to do it? The thing?
Do it. Do the thing that everybody wants you to do.
Here's the thing. It's first up, Cheerboy Jeremy Goldstein. Stein? Goldstein. Thank you, Jeremy. Hi, guys. My name is Jeremy. And I'm commiserating the season two. He wants to commiserate, Mike. I miss Jeff Green, but I understand why we had to use the MLE on Patty Mills. But God, seeing Otto Porter Jr. and Demonte, how do I pronounce this? I know when you say it, I'm going to
remember. Bielitsa.
Bielitsa. When you actually write it, it's like, whoa, I can't believe that it's pronounced
yes.
that way. Bielitsa. Both on minimums for the Warriors. Warriors, while we have Paul Millsap also on a minimum, not getting playing time really hurts. Remember to the Nets were in on Porter. Any thoughts on the Nets solution for a badly needed 3-and-D, cheap 3-and-D wing? Our rotation is a mess right now. Good grief. Keep up the hustle. Bielitsa.
Bielitsa.
Bielitsa. well, Mike, is that, first of all, two things. Is our greatest need a 3-and-D wing?
Yes.
And two, is there one out there on the cheap?
The Nets' greatest need is to get Kyrie Irving vaccinated.
Yeah.
Or to convince New York City. I guess there was a report. I know Nets Daily tweeted out someone was reporting the Nets are working furiously behind the scenes to get New York City to change their vaccine policy just for Kyrie Irving, which I appreciate, I guess. I don't know. I mean, that's a complicated issue. There's been some buzz. Bobby Marks, old assistant GM for the New Jersey Nets.
Ooh.
And I think he was in Brooklyn. He was in Brooklyn. He had his trade season primer that came out on ESPN.
Okay.
Always a must read if you have that subscription. He floated Dorian Finney-Smith from the Dallas Mavericks as a possible, like, the Nets flip a 2028 first round pick for Dorian Finney-Smith. Finney-Smith is a high-level defender. He's always been like a nice role player on the team. I think he's on an expiring deal. But the other key data point is that if the Nets add like anyone using the Dinwiddie trade exception, it adds like $30 million in tax, which is a lot. The Nets do need a cheap three. They need another decent body behind. Because like Joe Harris, while not technically a D, he's the three wing. And they just need like another option to go to the bench. Even though their bench feels crowded sometimes, it's a lot of like big old dudes, Dayron Sharpe, and then a lot of smaller guards. There's just not in between besides Kessler Edwards.
Kessler, who's getting some play time. He played quite a bit.
The three kettle.
Interesting. He's a nervous Nelly, Mike. There is a underlying nervousness there, and he's very anxiety ridden about bringing the ball up the floor. That is like, oh my God. And he's a baby. He's a child. No, I like Kessler Edwards a lot, and I think that there's a lot there. But he's just got those like that jittery. I'm you know imposter syndrome kind of thing. Kind of vibe. Well, so far
it's just like too early for us to be banking on Kessler Edwards as
being the
backup 3-and-D guy. And Jeremy had this point about missing Jeff Green. I got nostalgic. Jeff Green was on the Woj Pod, a podcast I don't listen to, but I still subscribe to just because I want to see who's on it. And seeing Jeff Green, I'm like, because like this year's Jeff Green is not what he was last year. Last year he was better, but that version of Jeff Green is the perfect player for this team.
Yeah.
Now I know there's a lot of people that want Jeremy Grant on the Nets. Jeremy Grant has been a name that has been floated out there on the trade market. It seems like the Pistons don't want to pay him another contract after they already paid him now. He is not really a three, but he's a very passable D, very switchable, and a pretty good creator of his own shot when he needs to. And he knows Kevin Durant. They both grew up in the D.C. area, friends, blah, 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 blah. Okay. The thing about any Jeremy Grant trade is that I'm almost 100% sure, without even diving into the trade machine madness, the Nets would have to trade Joe Harris because of salary matching to get a $20 million player like Jeremy Grant.
I just don't think that that's the same. We're talking about like the same thing with Jeremy Grant. Like, that's just a totally different sort of player. You know, he's a somewhat ascendant potential star player. Maybe if you squint, maybe used to be, maybe a year or two ago.
He was a good role player on a really good team and then has transitioned to like the star of a bad, really bad team. Like, he has that flexibility. That's great.
It's sort of Caris LeVert. There was a Caris LeVert sort of, you know, need
very LeVertian.
Yeah. Need for 20 points. Somebody's going to get that 20 points per game, and it happened to be Jeremy. But, I don't see him as, like, fitting neatly into a utility kind of role on a team like this.
The Nets, I do think the Nets need to do something, but let me ask you this, Brian. Okay. Mailbag question from Mike Smeltz to Brian Egan.
Okay, we'll send it through the email.
Can you do your boy Mike Smeltz?
Next up, no, I don't do this. Mike. It's a fun idea.
Now that I played the drop, I can't.
It's Michael Smeltz. You got to play it all the way through.
Yeah,
it's Michael Smeltz.
Yeah, that was sad. Oh, sorry. Sorry to make you do that, to put you through that.
Terrible.
Joe Harris has not played in 5 weeks or whatever it is. Over those 5 weeks, his value to the Nets has increased exponentially, I feel like. Because it's obvious to me that as great as Patty Mills has been at times, this team, more than anything else, this team actually just needs another shooter out on the floor in the James Harden lineups, along with Kevin Durant, to hit open shots. The opposing team's defenses are going to have to work a lot harder when Joe Harris is out there on the floor than James Johnson, okay?
Yeah.
Is Joe Harris untradeable? Basically, I say basically, not, you know, of course, if you traded him for, I don't know, name any player of like a really high esteem, you would trade Joe Harris. But for the most part, is Joe Harris untradeable?
I mean, I think it's a bad idea. I mean, like, we're like, if the goal is to get shooting back in a trade, you're going to be sending out the better asset. Like, you're just going to be. So I don't really understand, like, if we're like, yeah, we need more space. Okay, well, you're not going to get much better than that. Whatever we can, like, gripe about his defense and that he has this meme about sucking in the playoffs or whatever, somewhat fair, you know, we'll see. But I think in general, like, you're going to be giving up the more high-value asset in a Joe Harris trade, unless, as you say, it's for, like, something stupid. Like Shaquille O'Neal comes back in the trade, Mike.
Like Terminator T2 Shaquille O'Neal, yeah. Like, comes out of the time machine naked.
Whoa, naked Shaq. That is intimidating.
Imagine Shaq is the shot of Arnold in T1.
Yeah.
Just, you know, naked outside the bar.
I'm imagining it. It's great.
Also, I do want to start a theme bar. It's Terminator Bar.
Ooh, and everyone has to be naked.
Naked, and then you have to kill a whole
in a kneeling people. Position.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be a dope entrance? I pose the question because I do believe Joe Harris, for his trade value in the NBA and what he brings to the Nets, I think he's untradeable in that scenario. Because you're never going to get someone really, really good for Joe Harris. Like, the tier I'm thinking about, like, I guess you could potentially get a Miles Turner type. Like, Miles Turner's the same salary. He's been the name that is, like, that amongst the Nets nation, Miles Turner's brought up often. Miles Turner would be great for the Nets. But I still think Joe Harris is more important for what he brings. Because no matter what he's doing, when he's out on the floor, you have to respect his three-point shot. He's not calm and steady in clutch moments. But in general, like, he doesn't bring any extra, like, hey, I need the ball moments. He's just simply there to hit threes and to make plays. That's what he wants to do.
That's all he wants to do.
I find him extremely valuable. And I think when he comes back, like, a lot of our griping of, like, David Duke Jr. is not just not now. It's just not an NBA starter. It's like a nice find.
And we didn't talk about this, but, like, this is another, like, Nashism that is insane to me. This, like, this either or approach to, like, you're either a starter on an NBA team or you're out of the GD league, boss. You got 10 days to figure it out. Sink or swim, David. It's crazy. It's a crazy. Why is he getting starter minutes? Why is he playing so much? Like, it's such a, like, that's not an advantageous position to put David Duke in.
Why don't you dive into the mailbag? We got a new email from Sorrow. I mean, it's pretty long, so try not to read all of it, okay. But give the Sorrow the preference.
Which part do you like? I mean, do you want to
Could
read
Nash
it?
Be part of the problem?
I'll do the intro, but you read the email, okay? Because I have
okay.
It.
Yeah.
Next up, Cheer Boy. That's Sorrow Kutri. I threw some, I rolled my R's a little bit, but I didn't like how it sounded ultimately. Yeah. Mike, read it.
Hey guys, my question is, can Nash be part of the problem? I'm puzzled by Nash's rotations. I have been for 2 years. They're often baffling. I get that COVID has impacted the last two seasons, but he always feels like he is surprised by disruptions and acting like he's coaching from a bigger deficit than anyone else in the league. He's been unable or unwilling to settle on any base rotation for two effing years for more than two or three games at a time. He is not helping. So he has some really good examples of times when he thinks that Nash kind of like screwed up. We've talked about this before, Brian. Is Nash part of the problem with the unevenness of this team? So I've been a staunch defender of Steve Nash. I think there's no coach in the NBA who could have handled the emotional minefield that the Nets presented with Kyrie's being unvaccinated, bringing in James Harden, trading out Jared Allen and Caris LeVert, saying goodbye to Spencer Dinwiddie, trying to figure out like Kevin Durant's rehab as he's coming back to the floor and now he's back to an MVP. Like, I think Nash has done all of that. He also benched DeAndre Jordan, something that got Kenny Atkinson fired. But even I, a defender of Nash, I mean, like, his rotations are, as you pointedly laid out, David Duke goes from not playing to starting, and I'm sure he's going to be banished to the bench again. Like, there's no middle ground.
Yeah.
It's very much like all or nothing with Steve and James Nash.
I'm going to workshop a take live here with you. So I'm kind of thinking about, like, there's maybe a spectrum between, like, strict and, like, laxness, right? Like, and you can fall in there. But, like, at some level, you have to have some kind of structure. And in there, there's two versions of it. There's, like, one that's, like, a very strict rotation, right? I have these players that I know can do these things at this time, and they fit together in this puzzle, and that's what they do. And we roll that out every time, no matter what, doesn't care. Like, that's the plan. And then there's another one where there's a strict system, and it's like, I have all these players, I brought them in to adapt to this way of playing, and they all plug and play into that system. He's got neither of those two things. He's playing just this complete, like, he is off the reservation into I don't know where, but like the no system, because like we don't have an offensive, a good offense. Like, we have a weird, like, it just doesn't pass the eye test. Like, there's just like a couple.
That's true.
Like, what we were talking about last week, I still really agree with, and I would even expand it to the whole offense. Like, we were talking about it as Harden's offense, which kind of is our offense. Of just like button mashing in like Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter or something. We kind of do that as a team. We have a few things that we spam over and over again. And that ain't a system though. That's a couple of moves. So
that ain't a system, or is it an anus system?
It is both. Both an anus system and it is not a system. Nice. Sorry. Good Mike. but anyways, so like, you know, I'm not married to either one. Like, I've seen the strict rotation version of it, you know, do well. There's obviously a lot of evidence to suggest that the strict system version of it does well. this, like, it doesn't matter. None of this matters. And, like, we can just have star players play 45 minutes and eke out, you know, super hard won wins against bad teams. That doesn't feel like a whole lot of mastery of the craft is going on there. Like, that just doesn't, I'm not getting a MasterChef feeling from this kitchen.
To me, it links back to, like, I'm never going to believe anyone's an innovator ever again until, like, they do it over 5 years of basketball. Because I remember one of the most exciting things about Nash was thinking that, hey, this basketball genius is going to be coaching Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and at the time, Jared Allen, Caris LeVert, and, like, Spencer Dinwiddie, like, all this talent. And then he's going to take elements of the Warrior system, take elements of the Sun system, mix them together in this beautiful cocktail, and we're going to get this really unique team with high-level talent. And he comes here, and, like, the offense was exciting last year. It was definitely better last year in terms of it was way more devastating. But this year, you know, I don't even know where the Nets are ranked offensively in the NBA.
Middle of the pack.
But so much of it's just been based around, like, hey, Kevin Durant, you're the greatest player in the world. Please score for us, which is fine. Like, that is an offense. James Harden, you're the greatest orchestrator of offense in the NBA. Please orchestrate. And he hasn't been Boston Pops level. He's been more of, like, you know, the Tennessee Tabernacle Choir. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know what you're saying. I don't know what that means.
and so it gets back to this point of, like, it's Harden, Durant, and then we hope Patty Mills hits a shot, and we hope LaMarcus Aldridge is hitting mid-range jumpers. There's really nothing else to that. There's been so many pieces that have been missing that I don't fully blame Steve Nash. Like, you and I know that the Nick Claxton pick and roll, if Nick Claxton has been fully healthy all year, like, that's a thing that would be optimized by now, or mostly optimized. If Joe Harris was healthy all year, Joe Harris is so integral to this team now. I truly, he's like the MVP in my mind. You know, because, like, he really does matter. Like, him taking those 6 threes a game and hitting half of them are pretty impactful on the game. I go back to the innovator thing. I don't think, like, Nash is not here, frankly, because he has this, like, great offense, great system. He's here to sort of manage, to be just a manager of personalities.
Yeah.
And when he doesn't have the talent that he has, if he has Joe Harris and Nick Claxton fully healthy and Patty, all that stuff, he's less impressive as a coach.
Yeah. I mean, but the problem with this is that, like, comparing to last season, there's a couple of narratives that, like, we're picking and choosing from that are, like, selectively beneficial, maybe, is my concern. I'm starting to, like, just be like, okay, am I really overvaluing Steve Nash? Because, like, last season, the whole meme was that our star players only played eight games together, right? But we had a record level offensive efficiency. This season, obviously, we've only had one game in which all three players have played together. I don't know what the offensive efficiency was there. Obviously, it's not a big enough data set. But, like, I think last time I looked, like, 12th in offensive efficiency. Like, we had a literally historic offensive team last year. And now we have the 12th best offense. Kyrie is back now, so hopefully that changes. And obviously, like you're saying, the personnel stuff bring Joe Harris back. But, you know, I am open to the idea that all of a sudden that completely changes and we're, like, operating at a high level. I am also kind of concerned that whatever magic juju Mike D'Antoni sprinkles on offenses is sorely missing here. Can't we just go back to that? I mean, sure, he was in there. We got the emails, you know. Hopefully we could just bring that right back. But I don't know. In lieu of that, like, I'm just worried that we're, like, being like, yeah, like, but the two story arcs from this season and last season just, like, aren't matching up. And, you know, we have to kind of, like, got to take a hard look at this. Again, like, Kyrie Irving just played a second game and it was a not great experience without Harden, especially. So, murder new. And also, Harden's gone back to sucking too, which is not great.
Yeah. And let's do the reality check thing. Like, the Nets are second in the East, but they're second. They're two games over the 76ers in terms of wins. Actually, the Nets have 25 wins. The Cavs have 23 wins. The Cavs are the sixth seed right now. So they're second in the East, but there's, like, not incredibly much separating all those
teams. I haven't checked the spread for this Nets Bulls game tomorrow night, but I'm not If the Nets are favored, I'm not picking them to cover the spread. I'll tell you that
There's no way that they can be favored. I'll look it up. But actually, well, the Bulls play tonight, which is the one thing that could help the Nets a little bit, that there's a back-to-back or something.
Anyways, we're trending negative. Let's get another email in
here.
Yeah,
I don't want to be too down. I do think Nash is doing a good job. I think he's the right coach for this team. I just think, I don't think we fully understand how, it's an excuse. The team has had injuries. Every team has had injuries, yes. But this team in particular is built so top-heavy. The trade for Harden and having three max contract guys on your roster, it leaves you, if you're an injury, if you're one of those guys gets hurt, really hurts your team.
That's all.
Or he doesn't get vaccinated. That's sort of he didn't get vaccinated.
Next up, Cheerboy.
Sorry.
That's Elijah S.
Good for you for not.
I know, doxing. I keep doing that. This is also trending a little negative, but we'll blow right past it to the meaty part of this. So he says, "Hey guys, I feel like at the end of these close games against mediocre/bad teams, KD is kind of gassed. He's obviously not going to admit it, but defensively he gets a little lazy, and at times his shooting falters down the stretch. In the fourth quarter, occasionally see the Spurs game. Do you think we should be managing his minutes differently? Obviously, we need him to play a lot so we can win, but maybe play him in shorter bursts and have him shoot the ball more in those stints. I don't know what Nash is doing right now. It's sustainable. Would love to hear your guys' thoughts." So, minutes, Mike, minutes, Smeltz. here's the situation, Mike, that we can't have. We can't have KD playing a lot and losing in ugly losses that don't move the needle towards, team cohesiveness. That can't possibly be. That's a bad resource to be expending to get a deficit out of. So what do you do? What do you do, Mike? Talk to me. Pop some cola. Get a pop and talk to me.
I know I bring up Joe Harris a lot. Joe Harris is going to help Kevin Durant.
Wow, there it is. You're just all in on Joe Harris.
Here's how it's going
to
happen.
Moving all your chips in. Wow, okay.
What Nash has had to do this year, which I don't like, is that he's had to keep Harden and Durant out on the floor against other teams' bench units much more than you would like. That's where those minutes are coming from, obviously. It's like when the other team starters they all fully go out. It's not hockey. They don't all take a shift off.
It's not hockey, guys. It's basketball. Special podcast.
God damn it, Heb. That's my miracle. Miracle on Ice. God damn, when they're yelling at Herb.
I don't know that movie well enough to remember.
Good.
Yeah.
That's good. So Durant and Harden have had to play on the floor against bench units. The bench unit that we're missing is the James Harden led Nick Claxton pick and roll, Patty Mills, Joe Harris shooters, and James Johnson doing weird James Johnson things, or Bembry doing Bembry things, right? Because we don't have this optimized James Harden bench lineup that will, one, really juice the offense when it comes back. Because what Harden, the best thing that Harden, the best lineup you can put around Harden is shooters and a pick and roll big, right? That's exactly what he needs. That's the way he's best going to operate. The Nets can't run that lineup. There were times they were running Harden with James Johnson, Bembry, Bruce Brown, and Nick Claxton, all non-shooters, right? So when you get Joe Harris back, you run him more with that bench lineup. I mean, he's going to play 30 minutes a game if he's healthy. That lets you then take Durant fully off and actually get him 4 minutes of rest in the second quarter and 4 minutes of rest, in the fourth quarter, 6 minutes of rest in the fourth quarter. And that decreases those minutes, and he gets back down to average. Here are the top minutes per game guys in the NBA right now. And there's going to be a common theme besides the Nets. Fred VanVleet is number one. Durant, Harden, 2-3. LeBron, 4. Jason Tatum, 5. Lillard, 6. Bradley Beal, 7. Everyone but the Nets, those teams are not that good. Mm-hmm. Now, the Raptors are good and ascending. The Lakers are fine now. They've righted the ship because of Malik Monk, but they've had to rely on LeBron so much Those are all like singular superstars on teams that are like fighting for playoff spots are just like not that great. The Nets are number two in the East, but they're relying, they're so relying on Durant and Harden to carry them throughout the entire game. They need to get down. Like Steph Curry is averaging about 35 minutes a game. Okay, that's not that different than Durant's 37 and a half, but that is a difference. There is a tangible difference. Do you know who Steph Curry's tied with?
Who?
For minutes per game? Seth Curry.
Oh, weird.
They're averaging the same amount of minutes.
That's so weird.
Wow, weird. So I do I think it's a big problem? I love Kevin Durant's attitude about this, where he's like, I'd rather die on the court. If I die, I die. That's a great, it's fantastic. I just think, to the point of the email, it makes, if you're tired, you're less effective at the end, in crunch time.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. You don't want Durant to be ultra tired at the end of a shitty Portland Trailblazers game.
I will say one of the only and maybe the best innovations that Steve Nash did was the guy doesn't play the first quarter and comes in and plays most of the rest of the game. That was a great concept. He should bring that back for Kevin Durant. We should do the non-starting line, like a whole punt on the first quarter. And then, because really, it's about timing this win. You know, you just want to be up when
don't
the, when
you
the clock.
Don't you dare give Steve Nash another idea for a starting lineup. He would absolutely love to start David Duke, Dayron Sharp, Kessler Edwards, Cam Thomas, and Marcus Zagorowski.
Dayron looked good last night. He looked good. I'm seeing some maybe a little That's future for Dayron. Pick. We shall see.
That's my draft pick.
All right. Mike, get us out of here.
All right. Thank you all. We were going to do news around the league. The one item I just wanted to say, just quickly, is it seems like the Sixers, there's rumors now, Marcus Spears, Tobias Harris, they want to attach Tobias Harris with the Ben Simmons trade. Just small indication to me that there's no Ben Simmons trade they like, so now they're going to the backup plan, which is we're going to clear the books, and that's why they would do it. Just so everyone knows, that's what's happening. Be aware.
News around the league. That was...
Hey, thank you all so much for listening. It's so great to be here with you guys.
Really good. Mike, what,
find us on email, nestpod@gmail.com. Get a part of that conversation. Discord, links in the Twitter bio. YouTube, every episode's going to be on YouTube. It's a great gift to you all. We love to show our faces. And iTunes, Apple, five stars if you want to have them.
It is our faces are a gift to you. Thanks for listening. All right. Shout out to the Discord. Bye, everybody. Bye.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.